Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Switch at Birth, one of the most acclaimed family dramas in recent years, opens its final season on Freeform Tuesday night. Creator and executive producer Lizzie Weiss joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Also ahead, more on last Friday's topics in our Up segment, our classic trivia question of the week, and we salute a pair of classic TV superstars, Mary Tyler Moore and Mike Connors. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you all for joining us on this Friday afternoon, and welcome to the program All About Television. 43 degrees top of the hour here in New York. We have a terrific episode in store for you. First half, a Peabody Award-winning writer-producer of a show that has been acclaimed, as I said, one of the most popular family dramas on television, going to its final season next Tuesday night on Freeform. And then our second half hour, we want to turn it over to you and give us your thoughts on Mary Tyler Moore and Mike Connors, two classic superstars who passed away over the last 48 hours. But throughout the program, we want to hear you and get you involved. So pick up the phone, get the voice going, and get this number going. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the world, right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to use the phone, that's no problem with us, because we got a chat room up and running. It's SimonApple04 by name. It's available at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and guest 1018 is already in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. All the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Tomorrow We Tell Live is brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in this program. Lizzie Weiss from Switch at Birth joins us from Los Angeles after this quick news note. Get ready for another gambit by an international news network to succeed in the United States. The contender this time is I-24, owned by Altice, which on February 13th, the network's U.S. format will premiere on the company's cable systems here in the New York metro area, Texas, and elsewhere. I-24 will set up headquarters here in NYC, open a bureau in Washington, D.C., and employ some 50 journalists between the two sites. According to Variety, Altice, which has I-24 going on in Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Middle East, will attempt to get clearances among other cable and satellite operators. Last April, Al Jazeera dropped its U.S. service, Al Jazeera America, after a 3-year existence. One other quick news note, Conan O'Brien will do a special for Mexico City on March 1st in prime time on TBS. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live in an area exclusive from Los Angeles, the Peabody winning creator and executive producer of Switch at Birth, Lizzie Weiss. Lizzie, it's great to have you back.
Thank you. Hey, nice to be here.
Lizzie, when did you and your crew and your cast start thinking it's time to bring this show to a close and this is the year to do it?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, you know, as you're rounding to 90 episodes, I think you start feeling like, you know, there is a life to a show unless it's something like Law & Order, which can go on forever, or SNL or something. And I think, you know, there is a, you know, 10 or so episode kind of, it could be now, it could be in 10 episodes. I feel like we could have gone on for 10 more. We also felt like 103 was a pretty strong number. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't like to repeat myself, and I feel really good that we never had to do that. So we were really psyched to get season 5. We were given 10. We were given indication that maybe we'd get 10 more, and we kind of had a two-pronged system of, like, if we get 10 more, we'll go down that path. If we need to wrap things up, we'll go down this path. So it was okay. It was fine in the end.
So when you get the call, okay, this is it, final season, how do you approach the final season differently than the first batch?
I mean, you know, it sounds, you know, so we premiered in 2011, which is now 6 years ago, and I remember, of course, you never know what's going to happen, right? You know, we thought that the pilot was special and really strong, but you don't know if audiences are going to respond to a family show with a deaf protagonist and all that kind of thing. And I remember the night it premiered, I just thought, if it is something that people in my life, my friends and family, think is smart and complicated and nuanced. And honestly, I wanted the critics to like it more than good ratings, which is very silly, of course. Now that I'm, you know, been doing this a long time, you need the ratings to stay on the air. And so I sort of had the same approach at the end. I just wanted the last 10 to have the same quality that we started with. And as long as we sort of keep our eye on the ball that way, you can't really think about, you know, hitting like, oh, making everyone happy or that kind of thing. I mean, a series finale, you know, I'm a fan of you know, TV shows as well, and there have been series finales that I've loved and some that I haven't as much. And all you could really do is try to give the fans something that is surprising and inevitable at the same time, right? That is, well, at least for this kind of show, that is satisfying. If for this kind of show in which people, I think, go to it for an emotional aspiration, you know, and so you could feel like, yes, that is the ending that I want for at least the family as a whole. It's not, you know, every specific character that you couldn't have thought of. So the short answer is I just wanted every episode to be smart and surprising until the end, and I'm very proud of these last 10, and I can't wait to see the fans' reaction online.
As you work through those episodes and you're trying to have these last 10 episodes be accepted by fans and by the public at large, was there a theme or an issue that you had explored earlier that this was the prime opportunity to do now?
Issue-wise that we did in the last 10?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? Or an issue with just the fact that being in the last 10 on a show?
Well, let's say for one reason or another there was like an issue or a subject matter that you wanted to explore and for one reason or another didn't come off or you couldn't do it earlier on, that you decide, okay, with these 10 episodes, we're going to make sure this issue gets covered. We're going to make sure we bring up this subject. We're going to make sure that we don't leave any issues we wanted to focus on unturned.
No, I mean, you know, from the very beginning, even within the first 10 episodes, my executive at then ABC Family, now it's called Freeform, said, don't save, never save anything. And meaning, you know, put it all out there as soon as possible in this landscape with so many shows. You got to just put out there everything that you want. So, you know, I had a big twist in the first 10 about, you know, who knew what about the switch. And, you know, I think I had maybe planned on pushing that back a little more, but you know, we put everything out there as soon as we thought of it. And then we would get batches of 10. Our seasons were usually 20 episodes, but we would shoot them in 2 10. And so the writers and I would sit down for 5 or 6 weeks at the beginning, and we would talk about, you know, the character's arc for the season. Of course, on every show, they do that. And then, you know, we got to the point, you know, the first 30 episodes were really nature versus nurture and, you know, family and what makes a family and is it biology, is it environment, all those kinds of things and who gets to decide what in parenting these girls. And then we got more into disability and deafness and in season 2, really seeing things through the point of view of our deaf characters. And then in 3 and 4, we did sexual assault, Down syndrome, and we're tackling race this season. And that wasn't something that was always in my back pocket that I was holding on to. It was something that was in the news a whole year fall ago in 2015 when the writers and I were meeting. It jumped to the front, started on ESPN, and it jumped to the front pages when a football team at University of Missouri decided to boycott playing until the university president stepped down. And, you know, since we were a program about college, which is pretty unique on TV still, you know, I just decided there really wasn't any reason that we shouldn't be tackling race on campus because it was such an important issue. And then, you know, of course, we were delayed 15 months going on air, and now, you know, race is in the Black Lives Matter. The story popped in the past 12 months with, you know, police and all that. So now, it's, you know, unfortunately, it's more relevant than ever.
Twisted Birds, the award-winning Freeform series, will begin its final season this coming Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. We're speaking with the people aware of that series, creator, executive producer Lizzie Weiss, who, by the way, wrote that opening episode coming your way on Tuesday, directed by Alan Arkus. She did a very film, long time ago, Rock and Roll High School, and he's also some wonderful TV work as well. Lizzie joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Told Live. Tommy Applebaum will be live from that other coast in New York. For you to reach the top of the hour, happy you're with us. If you have a question or comment for Lizzie, give us that ring, 646-652-2906. 1036, or use our chat room, sign up with 04 when they let them get 1035 and 1023 into the room. We've got 3 episodes coming your way next week to wrap up January and get your February going in high gear. And coming on Monday on the program, we've got a night edition for you. We'll kick it off with a television network that was on for a while, then went off, and now it is back on. Punch TV Network, out to be one of the most diverse forces in television. We'll have an exclusive interview with the head of that network, Joseph Collins. And then, 2 people from Supernatural have started a series called Kings of Con on Comic-Con HQ. It is the smart TV device service put on in part through Lionsgate. And we will have the creators and co-stars of that series, Richard Speed Jr. and Rob Benedict. And finally, we will also have an exclusive interview with the head of original programming at TV One, D'Angela Proctor. And we'll talk to the showrunner of their first 2 series of the year, The Game of Gaming, hosted by Chris Rock's brother, Tony Rock. It premieres next Tuesday night. And we'll have the showrunner, Brian Burkowski. That's all coming up Monday, 9-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Lizzie, how does the plot go from episode 1 on? What are some of the major things? You mentioned race on campus. What are some of the things that our heroines, of course played by Melissa Milano and Kayla Clark, what do they deal with as they maneuver life in college and beyond?
In these next 10? Well, we ended our season 4 with a big cliffhanger, which we traditionally don't necessarily do. We had a tag where we decided we would either, if we were going to end the show at the end of season 4, we had a beautiful ending with the birth of this new 10-ish baby, Carlton, a child with Down syndrome, and the family gathered around. And then we shot a tag that we knew if we were lucky enough to get a season 5, we would pop on, and we did. And so the girls, we were really inspired by, I went to Spain for a semester when I was in college, junior year abroad, and a lot of us in the room had done something like that. So we really wanted to do something with when you're that age and you go across the world and it all feels so stimulating and exciting and you feel like you're the only person on the planet who's ever done anything like that. And then you come home and it all kind of dissipates and you feel like, oh God, did any of it have any meaning and was any of it real? So we took the girls to China and then we will explain in the premiere on Tuesday, they end up staying a lot longer than just the 6-week trip that they had planned. And then they get this mystery phone call that we show that is an emergency back home that the girls have to rush back. And so, we have the fans are excited to hear after all this time what compels them to leave this incredible opportunity and journey they're on to go home. And then when they go home, how have things shifted in the family? And we really made sure that for every main character, there was a reason we had a time jump, that we pick up with them in a different place. And that goes for all of the parents and the brother and, all of our main folks. And then, as I said, we dive into this race issue on college campus right away in the premiere. And something pops up. Well, we've shown it in a clip. So there's a party on campus, which is a big thing that we've seen that has gotten a lot of fraternities and other parties in trouble. Where you were supposed to dress like your favorite musician, and a white character of ours, sort of a beloved, funny, goofy guy, dresses as a black rapper, Lil Wayne. And he wears not blackface. We thought that was going too far. But he wears the low pants and we have a wig. And, for him, he says, I love Lil Wayne. I'm honoring him. And there's an African-American character named Iris who takes great offense. And she doesn't really get into it in this episode. But there are chat rooms on campus, of course, and it pops up everywhere, and it initiates a campus-wide conversation about race in which Mingo and Daphne, who is with Mingo in the photo, get in big trouble. They get in trouble as, Daphne is sort of Latina, right? She was raised Latina, but people don't see her as minority. She has white skin. So as these two white characters who are playing with black, costumes that a lot of African Americans on campus say that's uncool, and so that's what we kick off, and it begins a whole story about that.
Mm-hmm. As you've done season after season of this series, what do you make of the public's ability to take on the themes that you showcase and the way you showcase it. One of the highlights of your series was the episode at the high school, which was done mostly in sign language and mostly without dialogue, which is still one of the great landmarks of television.
Thank you. I always refer to that as our crown jewel. In 103 episodes, it's possibly my favorite, though it is quite tough. In the pilot, there was only one scene in which we had two deaf characters in conversation, and we subtitled it because, of course, they weren't vocal. And the network was incredibly supportive about that. As we sort of grew the show, my partner, Paul Steuben, and I, who was the showrunner with me, we would sit in editing and we would learn the process of, hey, we can do more and more and more. And then, oh, God, is it too much? You know, how much can viewers take? And, you know, how fast can the captions go for an audience that isn't used to reading that fast? And it was definitely a learning curve. But after the first season, we got to the point we were comfortable enough to say, let's do it. And the network was totally psyched, totally on board. And it was a massive risk. We were terrified that it could have, you know, just not worked at all. But we looked at it. There was a Joss Whedon, you know, Buffy called Hush. That it was different, but it also took chances in a way, you know, having to do with sound. And it was a little bit of our role model of, hey, you know, they did it. They had magic, of course, and we didn't have spells. But we found that not only, of course, did viewers okay with it, but they loved it. And I think, you know, over the course of these 5 years, I was just lucky to be doing a show in which audiences were given more credit, they were, you know, treated more sophisticated, and they rose to the occasion. You know, there used to be this sort of, I guess, conventional wisdom, oh, audiences won't read, which, of course, was nonsense. So ABC Family has blown up in the past 5 years. You know, there's been, you know, hundreds of more, you know, shows. It's just been an incredible time in TV all around, and I'm psyched to be part of that in my own little way with the sign language part of it and proving that people will read and they're fine. And what they also say is that they are forced to look up, right? Everyone's, you know, texting and running around and doing five things at once when they're watching TV. On this show, if it's silent, you got to run back to the TV and see what you're missing. So that's kind of a cool thing about our show as well.
How has the cast risen over the years to what you and your producers write? Not just Vanessa and Katie, but also Constance Marie and Leah Thompson and everybody who's been involved in the main cast of the show.
You know, it's funny. You know, I was lucky enough to get actors and Marlee Matlin, who were incredibly well known. I mean, you know, Leah Thompson, Back to the Future, Constance Marie, The George Lopez Show, DW had been Friday Night Lights, and such a, you know, well known character actor, and then Marlee, you know, the youngest actress to win an Academy Award. So they were incredible role models to our younger actors on being professional, and we were so lucky on our set that we didn't have, you know, prima donnas and all of that. And it was just great to have people who were, what was surprising to me was they were incredibly grateful and psyched to be on a show that was intelligent, where their characters were full, where we had full stories for the parents every week, where they weren't just saying, you know, good job, come home at 10. And they were professional enough to know their ups and downs. I mean, I've been there too, you know. We've all been in the ups and downs of Hollywood, so that when they were on a show that was really well received and winning a lot of rewards, they were proud and they were psyched, and that energy was really sweet. And I also really want to give a shout out to the crew. It was really incredible to me. I mean, this is my first time as a showrunner. So I didn't know, you know, I hadn't been on so many shows. I had sort of a different path to get where I am than a lot of other showrunners. But the crew was so lovely about the content. I mean, I used to always think, yeah, I don't think the gaffers care that much about what we're shooting. They're just doing their job. And you know, I'm sure some of them are. But I can't tell you how many of them would stop me and say, I love this episode, I love that scene, I'm so excited about this story. And then they would tell me, that's not normal. We're often on shows where we're just happy to be working with good people, but we don't feel passionate about the content, and we feel really lucky because with this show, there are scenes that move us personally. And I will tell one story that I think is really special. So we had an episode last year where Toby finds out that he's going to have a child with Down syndrome, and it's a real struggle for him. He's come to terms with, frankly, he's trying to decide if he should abort the baby, and he goes through the family has all these different responses, which we just thought was really real. And we discovered this International Day where you wear mismatched socks, and it's sort of an honor of people with Down syndrome and with difference. That's the whole point of it. And so, there's a scene at the end where the family wears mismatched socks as a way of showing Toby, we support you, we're with you. And I don't read the call sheets that often. I'm kind of running around doing a bunch of things, and I ran down to set the day they were shooting it. And when I got to set, the entire crew was wearing mismatched socks, and I just started to cry. I couldn't believe it. They had put on the call sheet, in honor of this scene, please wear mismatched socks. And the DP did it. The director did it. It was just, it was really a show that it was a pretty special show, and that our crew was with us.
Lizzie Weiss is the Peabody winning creator and executive producer of Twisted Birth, which begins its final season on Freeform this coming Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. She's live from Los Angeles with us right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you're with us on this Friday afternoon. We want you involved, so give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Sunday night after the Super Bowl on Fox, 24 is back as 24 Legacy. And our special Wednesday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, my lead guest will be 24 and 24 Legacy executive producer Manny Coto. Manny Coto live with us next Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on our program. And on the second half of the hour, we'll go live to England and we'll speak with two producers of a program premiering that night on many PBS stations as part of Nature. It's a new mini-series called Five to the Wild, and it features some of the most unique nature photography you have ever seen, where animals look at other animals that are actually cameras. It may sound crazy, but when you hear about the technology that was used to make this happen, and we've got the people that made that technology happen on our program, live from England, producers Philip Dalton and Matt Gordon. That's all coming up with Manny Coto of 24 Legacy next Wednesday, February 1st, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What was life like the moment you stopped the camera on the last episode?
It was sort of surreal, actually. It was very strange because we didn't even necessarily, I mean, of course we wanted it that way, but we ended up shooting, of course everyone knows, right, that you shoot out of order. You don't shoot the scenes in order of the episode, but we ended up shooting the final scene of the series as the final scene of the series. And we were on location at our house. Often we're on set in Santa Clarita, but we were shooting in Beverly Hills at the real house, which we frankly didn't get to go to very often because it was expensive and far away and we're on a budget. And it was also where we shot the very first scene of the pilot. So it was this very odd circle for all of the people who had been there from the beginning, for the actors and me and Paul and, all of the people and my line producer and all that. And it was very emotional. It was really more emotional than I anticipated. I mean, I went to college for 4 years, and you always think of college as being this sort of seminal part of your life. And I was on the show longer. The show was a bigger part of my life in some ways. And, after I left college, I think you always think, oh, I'll never have experiences like that that'll change my life, where I'll make as close friends, where I'll grow as a person. And I was wrong. The show really changed me in a lot of ways, and I have the most incredible friends of my life from the show, from being in the trenches with them for 5 years. And it was felt like camp on the one hand. People ran around giving out, necklaces and bottles of wine, and I got sweet notes from every cast member saying what the show had meant to them. And I think everyone kind of got, oh, wow, this is the end of something, and try to take it in, like you do on big days, like on your wedding or, big moments like that. You try to really soak it up. And, our director, so we purposefully got our director, Steve Miner, who directed the pilot. And we were pushing all the nostalgia buttons. We really wanted Steve to take us home. And, he yelled, that's a wrap. And everyone just started clapping. It was just a really, a spontaneous, the entire crew was clapping and hugging and taking pictures. And it was sad. It was really sad. But I felt just so full and so proud to sort of have been sort of point zero for all of that and you know, making people, it grows beyond you, right? You know, you're the first, you start at your little laptop, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's much bigger than you at the end, and that's a real joy to see.
Yeah. Lizzie, the biggest accomplishment of your series is that you gave deaf and hard-of-hearing actors like Katie and Marley, et cetera, the greatest, maybe the greatest showcase they've ever had, but you also gave the public the opportunity to get the experience of what it is like to be deaf, what it is like mm-hmm. to be hard of hearing, what you go through. How does television continue to showcase that experience, not just in front of the camera, but behind the camera? You should know that this week, and we'll show about this in our next half hour, we had a week ago the producers and creators of a show called The Chances, which is a pilot that was showcased at the Sundance Film Festival. They are deaf, by the way. One of them is deaf and gay. And it was very well received, by the way. It was a web series. They're trying to now make it a TV series. And the Turner Division Super Deluxe, which started out doing web content but is now doing TV content, is trying to make it happen. We interviewed a few months ago Jay Bryant, who is a deaf person of color, who would like to create a television series featuring deaf and hard of hearing people of color. What do you hope the TV industry does to keep this kind of showcase or expand this kind of showcase going?
Well, one thing I do want to clarify, because you know, you said we showed what deaf people go through. That is true, but what I think we also, and I hope we also showed, is not in a bad way. I want to make sure that doesn't sound like it's all negative. You know, it was a learning process for me as well. And a term that I learned from the show was deaf gain, not deaf loss, deaf gain. And what that means is most people who are deaf celebrate the fact that they're deaf. It's not something that they mourn. They have a culture, a language, a community, a perspective on the world that is unique. And that is something that I loved being part of. So it's not this like depressing, you know, oh God, this is what it's like to be disabled or different. It's just a different view of the world. That and then the second thing, and then I got a lot of this on social media once I officially joined social media and I was getting you know, fans' responses, was this is my life. This is not, and you, pretty much anyone you talk to will say, I have a nephew who, I have a brother who, my best friend from high school is. And, you know, I can't remember now, that I was on some disabled panel about disability in Sundance last year, and I can't remember the number, but it's, you know, 1 in 5 Americans, you know, either is disabled in some way or will be by the time they're 75. And this is something that's in all of our future at some point. So it's in all of our benefit to, you know, politically make sure that we have all of these rights, because it's a group of people, a minority of which any of us can enter at any time, you know, with by sickness or you know, accident or something. And so it's right there for all of us. You know, it's not something that's like, oh, people I don't know. And it's most people who, they want to see people like them, like their, that person and their family. So it's not like the right thing to do. It's just real life. It's just real America. And so I hope that we have shown that people will watch it because, and also it's fascinating. It's fascinating to see a new language and culture and all those things. And, you know, if you're interested in it as a writer, you know, viewers will be too. So I hope executives, I think, are seeing that and getting that. And there's always new worlds to investigate. That's the challenge, right? There's 400 shows. You guys got to find a new pocket. So I think that's something that is becoming pretty clear in a great way.
And the key that you said is celebrate. And I think part of the celebration is, as I sort of inferred, that we are now starting to see deaf, hard of hearing filmmakers or TV who want to get into television and who want to make something happen for their fellow members of society. Lizzie, before we go, what's next for you? Do you take time off? Do you go plunging into a new TV series? What's next for you?
The show wrapped in May, so I don't need time off. That was like, you know, 9 months ago now. I just finished in Blue Crush for NBC, a TV a pilot of inspired by the movie, which I also wrote. And I'm doing a pilot for Lifetime, which is about with a Native American protagonist. I really just like these, you know, cultures and worlds and exploring, you know, young women who are unique in their own way. So I'm doing 2 pilots and hopefully, you know, seeing what's next. I would love to have the opportunity to do it again and see what else, you know, we can do to change the world.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, we just got a call. We're going to get it in. Hello, you're on to Marvin Televised. What's your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, how you doing? My name is Sal. I'm from New York.
Sal, great to have you on. You're on with Lizzie Weiss from Switched at Birth. Go ahead.
Big question for you. So I have this boss in the workplace, and he's always talking about the show The Bachelor. And he never stops talking about The Bachelor. What should I do? Because it's so annoying.
Simon, I'm going to let you take that.
Well, that's a very interesting question. That is a very interesting question. I don't know how to answer that. And to be honest, Lizzie, I have, and Sal, thank you for the call. I do not watch The Bachelor regularly. I'm not a fan of the show. I have issues with some of the way it's done or how it turns out. But I have to say this, as someone who used to watch a show called Bachelor Father with John Forsythe, a wonderful comedy about a bachelor that Forsythe plays, a lawyer, Bentley Gregg, who responsibly raised a daughter, a niece, actually, played by Noreen Corcoran. I think you could have, I think it's a topic you can look at. You know, and we've had shows like Two and a Half Men, for example, which deals with men raising a kid. Love to see the same thing, women raising a child also. I think it's good fodder for a TV series if you deal responsibly. So I hope, Sal, I answered the question. And I hope that in some ways, Lizzie, that your show also dealt with the issue of how do individual people, no matter what their lot in life, deal with love, deal with relationships.
Yeah. One thing that we were, we heard a lot is that it was a show that you can watch with your family, with your teenager, and it wasn't embarrassing, and it could, provoke conversation. So that's right. That's something that hopefully we were able to offer too.
Sure did. Sal from New York, thank you again for the call. Switched at Birth begins its final season on Freeform this coming Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Check your local list of where Freeform is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the show online, go to freeform.go.com. That's www.freeform.go.com. And by the way, I'm very happy to say that Katie already has a new gig lined up. She's going to be doing a series for Go 90, thanks to the folks at Austruck, and it's called Confess, based on the best-selling book, and that'll be starting soon on Go 90, which is available on mobile phones through Verizon. I think that's also available on tablets, and hopefully down the road will be available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And all the best to Katie, by the way, on that new gig. It's really, really marvelous. Lizzie, thank you again for joining us. But more importantly, thank you and Paul and everybody in your cast and crew in Freeform for the last half decade or so of giving us a marvelous family drama that I think is really one of the best that's come along in decades. And thank you also for, as I said, giving the deaf and the hard of hearing community a showcase that all of us can celebrate and treasure. And all the best to you in your future efforts, and have a great final season.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Simon.
You're welcome, Lizzie. All the greatest. Take care. Lizzie Weiss, Peabody Award-winning creator and executive producer of Switched at Birth, joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, our classic trivia question of the week, and up on the people that we had on our program a week ago, and your thoughts and mine on Mary Tyler Moore and Mike Connors. We'll get to all of that after we pull up after the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, with 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for one of the most unique shows in all of radio, Motherhood in Hollywood. Join Heather Bruckner and her crew for some wonderful talk about what it's like to be in her position in Tinseltown. That's Motherhood in Hollywood, Mondays, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best speech are available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marvin Televised on this Friday afternoon, last one of January 2017. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted to have you aboard. If you have a question or comment on Mary Tyler Moore and Mike Connors, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Guest 1048 right now in the room. We will get to our thoughts about Miss Hewitt, Moore, and Connors, and our topic trivia question of the week after we take a few moments out for some thoughts from the fine people at audible.com. If you are in the market for something great for the family or for kids to read or listen to, how about this? One of the great Hans Christian Andersen fairy tales of all time, The Steadfast Tin Soldier, narrated by the Saint and James Bond himself, Roger Moore. Well, you can have that experience right now and get that audiobook to a 3-day trial from Audible.com. Audible.com is from Amazon, and it is a leading provider of spoken digital entertainment information. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including wherever you are hearing this on right now at Blog Talk Radio. If you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook like The Steadfast Tin. So it's one of the classic pieces of short stories and fairy tales, again, narrated by Roger Moore himself. And you also get that one-month trial of service. And because Audible.com is run by Amazon.com, you can bet the customer service is absolutely top of the universe. So if you want a different way of sound that can last a lifetime for you or people you love, go online with Audible.com. It's audibletrial.com/televised. One free audiobook, 30-day trial. What can you ask for? Check it out, audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com, a great digital sound experience that's perfect for anyone, you included. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We're going to repeat the question through the weekend because we want a winner. We're still looking for our first classic trivia question winner of the year. And if you're first with the correct answer, you can win the wonderful book, Britcom's FAQ, published by the fine people at Applause Books. Here's the question we posted originally on Monday. Name a television series starring Anthony Franciosa. Name a TV series starring Anthony Franciosa. He did 5 television series during his career, and those series ran from the early 1960s until the early 1980s. And we will take any one of those answers. So again, the question, name a television series starring Anthony Tony Franciosa. If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you are emailing from. And again, if you're first with the correct answer, you will win Britcom's FAQ, published by Applause Books. The FAQ series showcases the world of television in some wonderful ways. I know it's a book that you will really enjoy, dealing with the world of British sitcoms, past and current. If you just missed the question, no problem. I'll post tomorrow on my Facebook page and on my own Twitter hashtag. It's UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. So be in and win. That's how you get involved, and we appreciate it. So, and by the way, if we don't get a winner by the end of the weekend, we will repeat the question next Monday and next Wednesday on our trio of episodes coming your way. That's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Coming up later this half hour, we will have an up segment on the guests and topics we had on this program a week ago. But right now, we want to spend as much of this half hour as possible talking about 2 incredible talents who over the last 48 hours passed away. Mary Tyler Moore, and if you didn't hear the news over last night, Mike Connors, the star of Mannix, and before that, the star of a wonderfully thought series called Tightrope, which was on CBS, I believe it was 1959-1960. We'll get to Mike Connors in a moment, and we want to hear from you. We want to get your thoughts about MTM and Mr. Connors. So give us a ring, 646-652-2906 at 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. You can also put your thoughts in our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. It's on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Guest 1048 currently in the room. I was thinking most of today and yesterday what to emphasize about Mary Tyler Moore. So a lot's been said over the last 48 hours about her wonderful comedic talent, her breakthrough on the Dick Van Dyke Show, what she did with the Mary Tyler Moore Show, some of her other things on television, her wonderful performance in Ordinary People, which I thought should have won her an Academy Award for Best Actress, Supporting Actress, and also her great Broadway performance in the revival of Whose Life Is It Anyway? But the thing I want to focus on with you is that, like Lucille Ball, Mary Tyler Moore was a very similar trailblazer, in the world of television. And the more you look at the career of MTM and the career of Lucille Ball, they are almost exactly alike. They were both groundbreaking. Think about this. Lucille Ball, when she started, 1951, I Love Lucy, one of the classic TV comedies of all time, still seen anywhere, somewhere around the world even at this moment, that she used I Love Lucy to launch her own production company with her then-husband, Desi Arnaz, Desi Lou. And over the course of its run, which lasted nearly 2 decades, Desi Lu started producing great comedies. They had studio space where other great comedies got produced, like Make Room for Daddy, The Danny Thomas Show. And then got into dramas with classics like The Untouchables, Star Trek, Mission Impossible, and ironically, with the passing of Mike Connors last night, Mannix. Well, same thing with Mary Tyler Moore. With her then-husband, Graham Tinker, in 1969, she formed MTM. And the Mary Tyler Moore Show, which ran seven seasons on CBS Saturday nights, was her breakthrough. And while she was empowering or showcasing herself as empowering women in a tough field, the world of television journalism, she was also using a production company to empower women and men to create wonderful comedy. The Bob Newhart Show, Rhoda, Phyllis, The Tony Randall Show, Doc, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. WKRP in Cincinnati. And then as time went on, wonderful dramas. Lou Grant, Remington Steele, The White Shadow, and then two shows that still are today really the benchmarks of this era of peak TV that we're in, Hill Street Blues and St. Elsewhere. And again, the more you compare, contrast the two careers of Lucille Ball and Mary Tyler Moore, the more you are just amazed at the trajectory of how their companies did. And you must give credit to Moore for shepherding MTM through that whole period of the 70s and 80s. And bringing together a wonderful new level of drama and comedy that we're also benefiting from today. It's fair to say that if it wasn't Norman Lear that was providing trendsetting comedy, it was Mary Tyler Moore through MTM. And from first moment to last, the first moment on television being the Happy Hot Point Elf, her last moment being an appearance with her former Mary Tyler Moore Show co-star Betty White on Hot in Cleveland several years ago on TV Land, that Mary Tyler Moore just showcased an empowered woman, someone who had a lot of fun in life, that didn't have to depend on having a male relationship to make her life go. And it was wonderful and refreshing for a lot of women and men to see that and to enjoy that and celebrate it, so it's using the term that Lizzie Weiss gave us in our last half hour. And what I will miss the most about Mary also is her wonderful dedication to her craft, her advocacy for diabetes, which apparently she suffered from most of her life and may have been responsible for her death on Wednesday, and that, in a way, her advocacy has led to some wonderful breakthroughs in that field as well. We are now starting to see more and more treatments. While there's no cure for diabetes, there are treatments. There are more and more of them, some of which are being advertised, by the way, on television as we speak. And the thing was that while she didn't see the cure in her lifetime, she saw breakthroughs in her lifetime, and that was a wonderful thing. Mary Tyler Moore was a truly incredible talent. She could sing and dance really, really well. If you've seen her on the Dick Van Dyke Show, some wonderful musical performances there. And while every show was a winner, she did have that variety show. She did have Annie McGuire. She had the Mary sitcom, the second one, and New York News, which was produced here in New York, where she played a newspaper publisher. She had more success than failure. Really very, very few failures when you think about it. She was an incredible talent and will be profoundly missed and will be remembered, I think, in the people in both in front of and behind the camera who are still with us and still, one way or the other, making great television. By the way, I want to welcome guest 1050 into the room. If you have a question or comment, want to give your thoughts in about Mary Tyler Moore, Mike Connors, we're going to get to in a second. Give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. I have to say it was a huge, Mary Tyler Moore was 80 years young and great when she passed away on Wednesday. And it was very surprising to hear the news last night that Mike Connors passed away at age 91. He had not been seen on television for over a decade. Apparently, he had suffered from leukemia just a week ago, and apparently he died from complications from that illness. The thing you should know about Mike Connors is that he was rugged, handsome as all get out, and a wonderful actor. And Mannix, the show that he is best known from, was actually his second shot at TV stardom. The first shot was a program called Tightrope. It was a groundbreaker of its day, too, from 1959 to 1960 on CBS. He played another kind of cop infiltrating organized crime. It was the first show of its kind on television. It was done in a film noir style. Connors was wonderful. And it actually, during its day, was one of the most popular programs on television. So you may be wondering, why did it only run a year? Simple. In that day, sponsors dictated whether you'd have a show on the air or not, because they controlled the time periods in prime time, for the most part. And Tightrope lost a sponsor in a very unusual way. I don't want to get into it because none of the time. But the bottom line is, despite wonderful audience rapport, great viewership, great ratings, Tightrope was canceled after a year. Good news is you can now see many of the Tightrope episodes that Connors did on YouTube, and I think you'll really enjoy them. They're wonderful, great, action-packed, wonderfully done half-hour shows. So I'm sure it's wonderful that after doing some roles, most disappointing roles and some interesting films, that when the time came for Desilu to do Mannix, Mike Connors was picked, and it turned out to be his super bellwether. In the first season, he played Joe Mannix, a detective working for a high-tech firm known as Intertech, whose boss was played by the wonderful actor Joseph Campanella. And then, for whatever reason, the creators of the show, Richard Levinson and William Link, who later did Columbo, and Bruce Geller, the executive producer also working at the time on Mission Impossible, decided, let's change the format. Let's humanize Joe Mannix, and let's have him work out of his home. Let's give him a secretary played by Gail Fisher, one of the first actors of color at the time to work in a regular role. And that really changed the fortune of the show. It became a top 20 hit. It got a great run on CBS on Saturday nights. Fisher herself won an Emmy Award for Best Supporting Actress in her first season on the air, the second season of the show. And Connors got some Golden Globe got a Golden Globe win in 1970. He also received several Golden Globe and several Emmy nominations for his performance. The thing about Joe Mannix you liked as a character was it was very multidimensional. Yes, a lot of action. And yes, Joe Mannix could take a fight as well as give one. But the nice thing was that he humanized the character. And you saw that in that opening title, that wonderful split-screen title, where as the different letters of Mannix came out, you saw him in different ways. Walking down a street, making toast and getting his finger burned, doing judo, climbing a ladder, et cetera, et cetera. To that wonderful Lalo Schifrin jazz waltz set to piano. Mike was a wonderful actor. He later went on to do a couple of short-lived series, including Today's FBI on ABC for a season. But he always took things in stride. When you watched him on talk variety shows, you just loved the way he was. He was just wonderful personality, wonderful talent. And I understand he did a lot of great charity work when you didn't see him in front of the camera and always came back. So no wonder why he lived a really outstanding life, even down to the end. And again, Mike Connors was a wonderful, iconic television person who, I'm happy to say, even after the unfortunate end of Tightrope, did get that second chance and made the most of it with Mannix and other shows too. He will be profoundly missed. Wonderful talent. By the way, one other thing about Mary Tyler Moore. I wonder what would happen if she decided to do a talk show. You know, a lot has been made about the appearance she made, the surprise appearance on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and I understand that that was played on CBS's tribute to Mary Tyler Moore last night. By the way, a lot of buzz about that tribute, what it did and didn't do on Facebook and Twitter, other social media as well. I think Mary Tyler Moore would have been a wonderful talk variety host. I really, really do. When I think about, you know, Harry Connick doing it now and all the people who have done talk shows, Mary Tyler Moore just had this wonderful personality, wonderful flair, could be very intimate with people. I think she would have, if she decided to go the talk show route, talk variety route, she would have been a winner. You know, you see Ellen DeGeneres now, same thing. I just think that she would have nailed that format, and I think she would have done very well. Ironically, her production company did do a variety show at the five-day-a-week show, the Lorenzo and Henry Music Show. Remember Henry Lorenzo Music, Calling the Doorman on Rhoda? Later was a pilot, Calling Your Doorman. And then in 1976, he did with his wife Henrietta this daily variety show. I caught it. was on WAW here in New York. It was on primetime. It was a terrific show. Unfortunately, it only lasted just more than a month. It was played all over the place, some stations in daytime, some late night, some primetime. It never got a rhythm. And it was a format that needed a lot of, I think, gelling to make it. I still remember at the end of that show, they would always sing the wonderful Bob Dylan tune, Forever Young. And Mary Tyler Moore, by the way, was forever young. And I think she will be to many, many people. I'd still love to hear from you, your thoughts about Mary Tyler Moore and Mike Connors. Give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. So while we wait till we get a call or we get a chat room reaction, let's do up as an update. It's our regular feature we follow up on guests and topics we have in this program. A week ago, we brought you the executive producer behind the new CBS series, Hunted, that premiered after the AFC Championship game won by the New England Patriots. That was Linda Foyce Silva. We also brought you the two people who put together a pilot called The Chances. It was originally a web series, and then at the Sundance Film Festival this week, it was showcased thanks to the folks at Super Deluxe, with the division of Turner, the folks that run TBS, TNT, CNC, and so forth. We had the two on the program, both Jeff, Susanna Stern, and Josh Feldman. Well, in the case of Hunted, the program had nearly 12 million viewers when it premiered Sunday night on CBS. It then had a two-hour premiere in its regular time period, Wednesday nights at 8. It got far fewer viewers, but still did pretty well, and the next episode will be next Wednesday at 8 in its regular one-hour version. I saw the Sunday episode, very impressed with the way it looked, very impressed with the format, and I'm happy that we did have Linda on the program last week. And then as far as Susanna and Josh, we're happy to tell you that the chance of screenings at Sundance this past week were very, very well received. Some people thought that the chances and the TV series would do better than other programs of its kind featuring hearing able people. Anyway, we will keep you posted on whether or not that program does become a series through Super Deluxe or through other means. We're very happy that Susanna and Josh were with us. And I want to thank Ramona, the interpreter, who was with us, really giving voice to them. And as I mentioned to Lizzie, here's an example now of deaf or hard of hearing filmmakers, show creators, finally getting an opportunity to do what they can do, to show off what they could do. And so keep my fingers crossed that the chances will become a TV series down the road. We'll keep you posted on that. And we'll also keep you posted on Jay Bryan, the deaf filmmaker, still trying to put together a television series here in New York. If you want to catch the replay of both of those episodes, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised, or check out the podcast version at iTunes.com and Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. We've got guest 1062 just joined us in our chat room, so thanks for coming aboard. If you have a question or comment, if you want to comment about Mary Tyler Moore, Mike Connors, your thoughts, how you remember either or both of them, give us that ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. And if you came in late on today's program, in our first half hour and change, we had Lizzie Weiss, the Peabody-winning creator executive producer of Switched at Birth, which will enter its final season on Freeform Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. It's Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Freeform. And you can find that channel on cable and satellite. Check your locals for that. You can also check out their website. It's www.freeform.go.com. That's www.freeform.go.com. Also check out their Facebook and their Twitter page. I think you'll enjoy it. They got some wonderful Facebook videos with the cast led by Melissa Milano and Kay LeClerc. And I think you'll enjoy what they have to share in those videos. So check them out. And again, thank you, Lizzie, for coming on the program. Second time around. First time around was before she won the Peabody Award for that series. And I'm happy to hear that she is getting some new stuff done, and hopefully she'll have a new series on the air sooner than you think. And if so, we will be delighted to have her back. So once again, we're able to take one call or one comment, so get into our chat room. Simon Apple 04, and welcome as guest 1062 just joined us in the room. So if you want to get your comment in, please do, or give us the ring very quick, which is 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Incidentally, more on Mary Tyler Moore, a number of networks and stations will be playing Mary Tyler Moore show marathons, Dick Van Dyke show marathons. We'll be honoring Moore in other ways. throughout the weekend. I understand Decade, the multicast channel, will be doing a marathon. Some other stations will be doing a marathon. I think TV Land may be doing something also. And I believe PBS is going to replay an interview that she did on one of their other programs. So check your local listings for where those programs and those marathons are running. Coming up next week on the Marvie Televised, we're going to welcome January Adam Style and welcome February in. Three episodes coming your way, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Starting off Monday with a 90-minute episode, our first guest, Joseph Collins. He is the head of Punch TV, a network we've covered in the past, which at one point wasn't happening anymore. But it is back. It's coming back as a multicast channel involving local stations around the country, and it's back as a showcase for diversity among people of color. So Joseph Collins will join us as our first guest. Then we will have the Supernatural co-stars who are in their second season of doing Kings of Con. It's a popular comedy on Comic-Con HQ, a service you can find on smart TV sets and smart devices, showcased in part through Lionsgate. Richard Speed Jr. and Rob Benedict. And finally, we'll have an exclusive interview with the head of original programming at TV One, D'Angelo Proctor, and the showrunner of their first new original series of the year, The Game of Dating, which is premiering next Tuesday night, hosted by Chris Rock's brother, Tony Rock. Then on Wednesday, we will have the executive producer of 24 and the new Fox series 24 Legacy premiering after the Super Bowl next Sunday, Manny Coto. And we'll go live to England for an exclusive interview with two of the key producers of the new PBS miniseries, Spy in the Wild, which premieres that night. And they are Philip Dalton and Matt Garn. They will join us live from England. And we'll have another episode coming your way 1 week from today. So three episodes bridging the gap of January to February. Next Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. It's blogtalkradio.com/televise. Don't forget, check out the podcast on iTunes this weekend. You can download it to your smartphone or tablet, take us on the go, and share it with others. And remember, you can hear and watch our program through Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. It also goes for other Blog Talk Radio programs as well. And if you don't have Apple TV, go to your local Apple store or order it online. We want to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? And what's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? What would you like to say about Mary Tyler Moore and Mike Connors? We'd love to hear. So email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and where you're from. That's how you get involved with our customer request of the week. Also, we have a feature called The Show to Know that we do regularly. Is there a TV show you like that deserves more credit, more attention? If we do, and we use your suggestion on the air, you, of course, will get the credit. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, you also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. We love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toth is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Be safe and be great out there, and now more than ever, keep a thought for the world. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.